Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is the October 16 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Thank you for being with us today. Our panelists include Aaron Curtis of Midco. He's in Bloomington Normal, Illinois. Arlen Suderman joins us from StoneX in Kansas City, Missouri. And John Zanker is here from Risk Management Commodities. It's a division of Zahner Ag Hedge. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. And there now you'll find a way to register for the Farm Assets and the Illinois Farm Economic Summits conferences. Both are listed there. They are December the 12th for the Farm Assets Conference in Bloomington at the Agris Center. You'll find all kinds of details about that event. It's day long. And then the Illinois Farm Economic Summits with the Ag Economist, and they'll be at the Farm Assets Conference too, but a shorter version on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, half-day events that will take place the following week on the 15th, the 16th, and 17th in DeKalb, Peoria, and Mount Vernon. And you are allowed to come and ask questions of the Ag Economist at the U of I at either event. All the details for both are online at willag.org. Get yourself registered today. The Agri Center is a smaller venue, so there is a limited number of seats. So get yourself registered, and we'll see you on the 12th of December or the following week. And one of those, actually, I think you probably should go to both. Now, let's turn our attention to the marketplace and our panelists today. And we'll get a list of items that maybe we should discuss. Aaron Curtis, what's been on your mind this week?
Well, we had a nice little three-day bounce here on corn. We've been in largely a 20-cent range in corn for the last 6 weeks. So I guess the question is, you know, every time we kind of get back up in this mid to high 20s on D's corn, we kind of run out of steam. Can we do anything with it this time around or not?
That is a good question, Arlen Suderman. I don't want you to answer that yet, but if you could give me a list of items that maybe you'd like to talk about today too.
Rare earth minerals and magnets, something a lot of people don't understand, but they are changing the dynamics of the negotiations now that have implications for soybeans.
And John Zanker at RMC, your list.
Well, I'll stick on that China thing, but point out that here we are into the second week in October, no Chinese sales on the books, probably not going to be many Chinese sales on the books for several weeks. And October being October, November, those two big months, we need to see something happen or the show's going to be over here pretty soon.
Well, this show is going to go on for a little bit, so let's continue. I want to pick up Arlen with the question that Aaron Curtis had. After a three-day bounce and pushing above moving averages, particularly the 100-day in the December corn on Thursday, can it continue to make inroads to the higher side? And if so, why would that be the case?
Well, we presume that we're getting into the second half of harvest now. And typically, we oftentimes will put in the harvest, not a harvest low necessarily. I think we may have already put that in back in August, but we tend to put in a low right around the midpoint as we find storage places for the crop. We're able to put it away, and farmers don't like the price, so they hold on, particularly with the promise of money coming from the administration and maybe a second payment coming from Congress, tend to hang on. What I'm watching has been the national average cash price this year. It is run almost identical to a year ago. It's been following the same pattern ever since the 1st of September. And so as we look at it, this was a time a year ago when it started to slowly climb higher. That doesn't mean I'm bullish about corn prices by any means, but demand is strong, and it takes several hundred million bushels per week to keep that pipeline flowing. And just that draw on a weekly basis can start to firm prices up and start to pull us higher. And I think that possibility exists here for corn because of strong demand. And even when you look on a global side, our global stocks to use ratio has been trending lower for the last decade and continuing to do so. And I think that works in our favor as well.
Aaron Curtis, do you have an answer for your own question?
Yeah, I think I agree with Arlen that typically when we get past that 50% point, I mean, you know, we're probably 60% done here in Central Illinois. So obviously kind of over that halfway point. Question, I guess, probably is we know that quite a bit of space was used this year for beans just because of the basis situation, and yields on beans held in there relatively well considering expectations, being that it was extremely dry here at the end of the summer in a lot of parts of the Midwest. So, you know, do we have a little bit of a bean space that's capitalized corn space as we get a little further into harvest? We're going to know that here in the next week to 10 days, a little bit of a weather event coming in this weekend, but after that it looks pretty clear again, so it looks like we're going to see quite a bit of harvest done on corn here in the next 10 days. So we'll find out if we need to move some more corn and or put it into some other space, be it the ground or as you say. But I think we also continue to watch this $4 cash mark on corn. So we're approaching that area, or if not exceeded in some parts of the Midwest. So we know the farmer went into harvest extremely undersold. So we've been seeing that $4 cash mark let loose of some bushels from the producer standpoint as well. So we'll see. You know, we're able to trade above the 100-day moving average or right at it today. We got the 200-day moving average setting up there around 438. We've got this little gap area from the summer back there around 432 and three quarters. So, you know, we get up into that 40-30 mark from a technical standpoint. We've got some junk to kind of get through in order to get this thing going. But I agree with Arlen. The demand base for corn is strong, and I think corn's got a pretty decent floor underneath it.
John Zenker, do you have a dissenting view at all?
Not at all. Agree with both Arlen and Aaron on that. I think we can move this higher due to demand, and that, you know, the biggest question maybe we have is, what's Iowa going to do with their corn yield? We just continue to hear all kinds of yields, and you know, I'm personally as confused right now about the state of Iowa as I've been on about any state in the last 44 years. So, you know, as soon as we get a little better direction on what's going on there, we'll have a little bit better idea on how high we can take this. But, you know, with the acreage increase, we can take the national yield down to 172, and it's still the largest production in history. So we have a lot of corn, and we're not going to 172, but, you know, we can certainly go to 180, 181, 182. While that might sound bullish, we need to remember we picked up $195 million on the stocks report, and the USDA is probably at least $300 million high on feed. So we'll need to use these rallies to get some additional sales on, I believe, in the coming weeks.
Well, that brings me back to you, Aaron, and I had a couple of questions about some things that you mentioned. So the idea that storage might be tight, I think, is what you're telling me for the second half. What impact does that have on bases? And then for those who are delivering across the across the grain scale and having to make a decision within a few days as to whether they want to sell it or to store it, how do they make that decision? What should they be thinking about as it's related to the in charge and the price that they're looking at on your spot bids?
Yeah, so the question is, you know, what does it cost you to get to January or March or whatever that period of time is? You know, what's your storage cost? You know, and what is your expectation? I think some of it in the pricing that we've seen, Todd, is just the expectation is maybe there's not a lot of upside in this market, especially if the trade war continues. So that's been influencing a little bit of sales. I think it's probably no secret, right, that there are some aspects of the farm economy that are getting tight, obviously, right? So farmers need some money in some instances, margins are tight. So that's influenced sales. And like I said, we went in with, you know, 5-10% of the corn crop and soybean crop bought. So just to get up to average levels, you know, if we're at, say, 30-40% average across the scale, you know, that's going to show a bigger percentage maybe of normal being sold across the sale. So $10 cash beans, when we've seen those in some instances, mostly early on in bean harvest, and $4 cash corn have been magic numbers to buy some grain. So the combination of needing some money and just the anticipation that maybe this market doesn't have a lot of upside to it have increased some farmer selling across the scale.
Arlen Suderman, I'd like you to follow up on these thoughts. And to put into some perspective, Frayn Olson, agricultural economist at North Dakota State University, and I have had conversations in the past thinking about what does the in charge mean? What's that cost? What's the carrying charge at home in the bin? And he says that everybody that's in the industry does a really good job of figuring out what the interest of the carrying charge might be to get from month to month to month. And to be honest, from his perspective, it costs the same at home in the bin too, nearly, or probably does. So how do you, and most producers won't think of it that way, but it really is that kind of cost, I think. So how do you put it into perspective for them?
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, we've been hearing about some free DP, but with drop charges as well. And that's just another way of the elevator capturing the carry that it's going to put at risk in order to do so. So when you look at the carry that's in the market, what opportunities there may be, you look at the basis improvement, storage costs, and particularly today's higher interest rate, multiplying that out times the value of that grain versus what you could get. Now, nobody wants to accept weak basis because you can't ever recapture that. But if you can get some decent basis, once you look at that storage cost and you look at the carrying charges that are there, you might be able to do just as well unloading it and being able to buy a call option or something and reowning it in that way, or some type of derivative strategy for reownership, and then not having to worry about the downside risk quite the same, and be able to move that grain if you're having storage problems or something like that. The main problem right now is do you have storage space? Do you have a place to put it or not have it? Are you being forced to sell at a low basis level? And so it's the basis that's the main concern. We've seen some places firm up their basis, but many of them are still weaker than what the farmer would rather have.
John Zanker, I want you to follow up, but Aaron, I'm going to put you on the spot and make sure I'm correct. You did tell me that you were looking forward to this second half and that basis could come under pressure from just the amount of storage that has been taken up by soybeans in places.
Yeah, I think that's still the question, right? It's more of a question. Are we going to see some spots, right, that have a little challenge putting the crop away, right? So far, you know, corn basis has been relatively steady here over the last few days. We've seen some improvement in soybean basis now that that harvest is relatively wrapped up. But I think it's more of a question, Todd. Are we going to see some continued, we could see some continued weakness on corn basis, depending how challenging this last 30% of the corn harvest is to put away.
So, John, what are you telling producers that are calling and asking you what to do?
Well, I just had a call from one of my North Carolina customers, and, you know, what do we need to do with the rest of this corn? He has a pretty decent corn basis out there, and, you know, I'm okay rolling it. I do expect a little bit more push in this board. But we have to be really careful. If we go back to the year before this one, last year, you know, we had a nightmare at the end of the summer, and or in the middle of the summer, into the end of summer, having roll basis in a big carry market, DP was just a nightmare. So we need to be careful with all those things. And, you know, at some point, let's put the money in the bank. We can do some forward pricing, pick up the carry. And, you know, if you're coming off the farm here, you know, I'm okay with a short-term basis, just with the idea that, you know, this market might have some pop in it. Beans, I'd be very, very, very careful there. And, you know, there could be a better strategy just looking at taking the price. If you want to reown in the options market, there'll be some opportunities there.
I want to stay with corn for just a moment, Arlen. What are you hearing on the intelligence from Iowa as to the impact that Southern Rust has had? And I know there are places, clearly, that there are issues. The question is that wide enough spread to really make a difference or not? And then here in Illinois, I think maybe the corn is slightly better than they expected. Certainly the soybeans were.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on soybeans and to some extent corn as well. A tremendous amount of variability. We get daily yield reports in here, and I was just looking over those yield results. And what I see the number of times a farmer will report, okay, I had these fields across the road from each other planted the same time. I sprayed the one, I didn't spray the other, or maybe I sprayed the one twice and I only sprayed the other one once. And it's between 20 and 70 bushel per acre difference in yield. A lot of variability in that, but 70 bushel I've seen several times in the yield difference when no treatment versus one or two treatments. So it had a big impact on yield. So what does that do to state average yield with that kind of variability? You would think that it probably proves a drag to it. And I do think that that's probably true, particularly for Iowa. We'll see some drag in that yield. But let's keep in mind they're seeing record yields in the Dakotas and parts of Nebraska as well. And even on soybeans, or one farmer there indicated that his soybean yield is going to be 20 bushels over his previous farm record.
Just to lay some kudos out to the land grant plant pathologist in early July when this first came in. They said, this is the problem. It is a huge issue late in the year, and you are likely that you're going to need to spray. They had that listed. They said it over and over and again. We had it on the air many times, but I don't know how widespread. It's hard to spend that much money, I suppose, when the price of corn was so low, trying to get there. And really, it was about scouting and whether it was in the field or not as much as anything else. Okay, so I do want to take up some other things. John Zanker, let's start with China and begin on the soybean side. No sales at this time. President Trump and President Xi having a spat in the last week over something that seemed to be in place already, of course, the United States, and we'll get to the rare earths in just a minute. But in the United States, there was already a push on to do port charges. The Chinese said, you know what, we're going to do port charges too. Things spiraled out of control for a moment. How concerned are you, I suppose, about trade deals in general? And I don't know, maybe everybody can go with a yes or a no on this to begin with. Will we sell soybeans in this calendar year to China still, or to any great amount? And everybody says, yeah, no, there were no answers. So we're going to go with a no to great, any great amount on that one. Okay. So now, John, what is it that has you concerned, and how concerned are you as it's related to trade?
Off the charts concerned, to be honest. I know, Arlen, you've been talking about this since February, and I've been talking to my customers about it since February, and we've been hedging since February, and not just from a trade perspective, but in February, we knew we were going to have a huge South American crop, and it turned out that way. And then as the trade war drug on, we saw China buying a huge amount of beans over and above normal in May, June, July, August, even September. I believe Stone has, they're estimating Chinese stocks, reserves, at 18 million tons above what we've seen on average here in the last few years. And they started building those stocks even a year ago. So they've been preparing for this moment. And if you look back at last year, I believe October, November, about 714, 715 million bushels we exported. 62% of those went to China. That's 443 million bushels, 24% of the yearly total. There aren't going to be any beans shipped to China in October. Can something get done at the end of the month to get some boats moving in November? That's a real tight schedule. So I think the best we can hope for is maybe some kind of deal that might let China start looking at rebuilding their reserves that they're going to use up, or they're going to use, not use up certainly, but use in October, November. And the Chinese government can come in and buy U.S. bushels without any tariffs. So I think that there could be some beans moved to China in December and January, but you know, again, the two big months, October, November, a year ago, starting on this date, on this coming week, this week, I believe we went 97, 95, like 87, 85, 75. I mean, those are the kind of numbers we saw total bean shipments. This year, you know, we had 36 here this last week. I think 40 to 45 million tops without China. So you're going to be talking about 30, 40, 50 million bushel deficits each week. And, you know, we just got excited about a crush report that came in 11 million bushels over expectations. So we have a problem. It needs to be fixed, or we're in for some rough times this summer if we don't see it, or excuse me, this winter, if we don't see a problem with the crop in South America.
Aaron Curtis, you agree? Rough times this winter?
Yeah, I think definitely along the river. Obviously, we've seen some improvement in basis levels from the processor side. John mentioned the NOPA crush numbers yesterday. You know, this year expected the North and South Dakota to crush almost 40% of their bean production. So that's a little brighter spot than it was, say, in 2018 when it was mostly an export market. Obviously, not much business going off the PNW. So those beans are having to find alternative homes. But from here east, Illinois east, we've seen basis levels on beans slowly starting to continue to improve as the crusher reaches out for some more soybean supply. But I agree with John that that window, that East Jan window, is really a limited opportunity right now for China to participate. You know, we've seen a lot of beans, obviously, from Brazil. Argentina's export change filled in a lot of the gaps that China still had for November. So that window continues to shrink, and Brazil's off to a halfway decent start on planting. And, you know, they're going to have some beans at least harvested in January. Most of those are likely go domestically, but we're talking a limited window past last half Feb into March the way it looks today. So I'm still optimistic that we get something done, Todd. It just doesn't sound like it's going to be a large volume. The bright spot, though, is if you look at soybean sales to other destinations outside of China, I think we're up 67%. So there have been other markets that we've been utilizing. And obviously, it doesn't make up for China, but it does help soften the blow a little bit.
Arlen, when the two presidents meet at the ASEAN Economic Conference, that ASEAN Pacific Economic Conference that will take place, will they have time to talk about soybeans at all, or will they simply talk about rare earth minerals? And what does that really mean?
I do think that President Trump will stick the word soybeans in there somewhere so he can say he did. But we still haven't got confirmation from President Xi whether he'll be willing to talk to President Trump. But hopefully there will be conversation, because talking is always better than not talking. But the primary topic is going to be rare earth minerals and magnets. This is something that China's been building toward for 30 years. We can track back the pattern of 30 years ago when they started the strategy and they started to take over businesses around the world that kind of mined and processed rare earth minerals and magnets, and then moved that to China. The mining and processing of these products is very expensive, and it's environmentally dirty. And China, of course, has cheap labor, and they can subsidize the industry that do the processing. So they undercut companies around the world. And so most of the world, including us, were happy to let them do it. China had the foresight to know that in the future global technology world, that this would be the cornerstone feedstock for the high-tech electronic world that we've become. And so they have monopolized that market down to 90%. But it's not just about the cell phones and the F-150 trucks that are dependent upon it. It's national defense. So when China made its move last Thursday, I wrote to our clients that China had just changed the dynamics significantly. They played, I'm going to call it the Trump card here, that they've been preparing for 30 years. This is, I think, the one big card that they had to play. And this allows them to control and pick winners and losers economically in the world, which countries can grow their economy and which can't. But it also means which countries can grow their military and produce defense weapons and which cannot do so. So this is a matter of survival and national defense. They have stated they want to topple the United States from being the number one military in the world and the number one economy in the world. And this is what allows them to do it. Why do this now? Because last week, President Trump invested in at least five mining and mineral companies in Greenland in the United States and applied the warp speed process that he used to get vaccines approved during COVID in months rather than years. And so the average time it takes a mining company to get approval for mining and processing rare earth minerals in the United States is 25 years. There's only one country that takes longer. And so he's moving that from years to months to be able to get our own supply of rare earth minerals and magnets. And that meant that China had this narrow window in which they could play this card that they've been building toward for 30 years. And that's why they played it. But that is the number one thing. It's still going to take us time to get to that point of having these products. But he's taken steps to move us forward in that process. And so that is the number one thing. And with all the military assets that we're giving Ukraine, we're using up assets that we can't replace without these rare earth minerals and magnets. And China knows that. It's one reason I think that Xi took a trip to Moscow earlier this year when Putin was looking for an off-ramp out of the war. And since that meeting, the war escalated. And so that's taking center stage above soybeans. And I think why it's going to be more difficult to get an agreement on soybeans.
How long do you think it will take to ramp up rare earth minerals produced within the United States' grasp? Is that a... It went from years to, you know, months, maybe for just the ramp up. But you've got to be able to get in and mine them. Is that 5 years out? How long before we really have something, do you think, or have you heard, that might be usable?
Well, first of all, I expect some environmental challenges in the courts here to try to stop it and prevent it. I anticipate that. But whenever I've listened to interviews of officials on, well, how long will it take? They always kind of avoid answering the question. So I'm not sure, although the president of one of the mining companies, when asked, said that we're going to break ground on a mine next week. So breaking ground on a mine doesn't mean that you're starting to pull product out of the ground in a week, but it does mean that we're probably months away, so to speak. How many months? You know, I anticipate it's probably going to be more months than less. It's probably not going to be next month by any means, but it will take some time. And it's a process that's needed to at least get started, but that still leaves us vulnerable, I would say, over the coming year.
That puts us back to the fundamentals of just the marketplace where we are today. Trade's an issue. China has not bought, not likely to buy, actually, I don't think, even into the new year. If they can get to January and February, they will not buy. Apparently, they're going to have to use their reserves because soybeans out of Brazil have a bit of a premium at this moment, so they'll pull out of their reserves. Certainly are willing to do that. That means we end up with the storage space and a usage item for soybeans. How much of a drag is it on the marketplace? And I think I'll go through all of you, but let's start with John Zenker first on the answer to that question.
Well, I think that we can go back to the production issue here. Now, if let's just say the USDA found a million less acres of corn and left a million more acres of beans, and we'd have gotten 2 inches of rain, more inches of rain in general across certainly the Eastern Belt in August, we'd be sitting here talking, can we hold the 950 level? I don't think there's any doubt about that. We probably had a 56, maybe even a 57 bushel bean crop on August 1st. So we're pulling yields down from that. We're not pulling yields down from the 53. So you know, from the information I'm getting from around the belt and what I've seen with my own customers, I think we might hold 53. And if you can keep exports where they are, you're at, you know, you're at 300 million and you don't feel too bad about $10 holding up. But we literally could take 300 million at least out of this export number. So once we get confirmation of that, and we're going to have a big dump of export inspection data here, maybe in November at some point, maybe late November, the later, the worse it's going to be. And so, you know, we just got to be very careful here. Any bounces in this bean market need to be looked at as a selling opportunity, certainly a hedging opportunity. And, you know, this could be a nightmare. And right now, for the first time in several years, we don't have any scares going on in South America in October. So planting is going along there. They're increasing the acres, maybe up to 3.5% or so. CONAB just estimated their crop at 178 million tons. So I believe that's another 330 million bushels over this year. We have a nightmarish scenario going on if we don't get this thing straightened out. And even if we do get it straightened out, it's not going to save the ship. And we need to be very careful.
Yeah, so I think we're using another 150-ish million off of the export sales number. So to call that 1.5 to 1.5 exports. So not a friendly sign, but I think like I mentioned, I think we've got some other sources on the export side that are helping make up for China just a little bit. You know, crush number could go up just a tick, and I still think yield probably comes down maybe a half bushel an acre. So, you know, I'm still looking at 350 to 400 million bushel ending stocks, which, you know, not as friendly as what we would like, but probably continues to hold beans in this 0975 to 1050 area. I know it's kind of a broad range, but that's really where we're stuck in, right? Both corn and soybeans, sideways ranges. We wait for a headline, we trade that for a day or two, and then we go back to nothing, right? So I think it continues to stay that way. So from a producer standpoint, if that upside is kind of too limited for you, I think you look at continue to move some ownership on rallies and re-own it with some kind of call option to kind of reduce your risk, depending on what these headlines may continue to say over the next few weeks.
Yeah, China has about 10 million metric tons of demand that they haven't supplied yet for December and January. They need to fill ahead of the next supply coming from Brazil. So if there is a deal, that's the possible purchases they could make, 367 million bushels roughly there. If you look at years, if you look at non-China buying, the highest that we've ever seen in non-China buying was, I believe, in 18-19 at about 1.27 billion bushels. This year, I would certainly expect it to be higher than that if China doesn't buy anything. I would say the bottom number that I would look at would be 1.4 billion. USDA is currently at 1.685, so that means that's around 285 million bushels below where USDA is at right now. I'm closer to the 1.5 or 1.55 right now, but that's working lower on a weekly basis. If, in fact, they would get some type of deal, which I don't expect, but if they would get some deal to get that 10 million metric tons from us rather than from their reserves, then I think we could see exports go as high as 1.75 or so in there. And when you put that together with our domestic demand, what we expect out of the EPA once they finalize things, then I think that really does put some spark into the market and give some opportunity. I would hate to base a marketing plan on that expectation because I think there's more downside risk than upside, depending on what happens with China. But I would certainly have a re-ownership plan in mind if we were to get something like that.
I thought you meant 1819 as in 200 years ago. And I was like, wait, that can't be right. 2018, 2019. We'll get a final note from each of you in just a moment. I do want to remind folks that they should visit our website at willag.org where they can sign up for the December Farm Assets Conference and the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Both of those are sponsored by the Farm Doc team or the University of Illinois Ag Economist. We thank you for coming to see us. Again, that's December the 12th for the Farm Assets Assets Conference, the 15th, 16th, and 17th for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. John Zanker, let's start with you. What's your final word for the day?
Well, from a marketing analyst standpoint, we can go back to June 30th and that acreage report. And boy, you had to start thinking of making some adjustments at that point with the increase in corn acres and the decrease in bean acres. And then we got hit with another one in August and a little bit more of an adjustment in September. So, you know, it's kind of flipped things. It's saved this bean market, taking that amount of acres out, really saved the bean market. But it dampened that, that bullish perspective for corn. So, you know, we've had to shift some gears and, you know, then you throw in the rust and, you know, it's going to be complicated, but I think, you know, we have to be realistic. We need to sell the rallies, use the rallies as hedging opportunities in soybeans especially, but also in corn. We can take this corn crop down quite a bit. You know, a 10 bushel reduction in Iowa and Illinois each is 230 million bushels, and we just picked up 195 million on the ending carryout. So it's not going to be easy, and we just need to be on our toes and get ready to move on the first good opportunities.
John Zanker is with Risk Management Commodities. That's a division of Zahner Ag Hedge. Aaron Curtis is with us as well. Your final word from Midco, please.
I think corn's got a better base for it, at least on the demand side and futures side, than what beans do. Agree with John, though. I don't think we want to fall asleep on this crop moving forward. I think if we remembered last year, we did have a nice little bounce after harvest, but you know, basis and spreads obviously weakened up too when the farmer participated. So we got to keep in mind, we still got a lot of grain to buy from the farmer. So that's going to limit the upside a little bit. Dease corn in that 430 to 435 range would be the next target if we can get there to increase some sales, but definitely look for some re-ownership opportunities through options in case this thing, you know, the trade headlines do start to lean more positive here over the next few weeks.
And finally, Arlen Suderman with StoneX.
Yeah, we've been working with a satellite-based company that's had a pretty good track record, and they're claiming that harvested corn acreage is about 1.2 million less than what USDA is saying. So we're going to watch that closely. If that's true, that's another 200 million bushels basically off of the crop, not counting yield reductions that we anticipate we may see from this point. That's not necessarily that saying that we're going to run out of corn, but it certainly removes much of the surplus. And we know that we've been trailing down world corn and supply stocks as a use over the last decade to continue to trend that level. So that does give us a little more hope for corn. Wheat's in a similar situation as well, and those two tend to feed off of each other. Perhaps the worst is behind us there in those markets.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists, including Arlen Suderman, as well as John Zanker and Aaron Curtis. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.